This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
All right, back here on this Tuesday edition of Follow the Money. Mitch and Paul on vacation. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you live in downtown Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, thanks for hanging out with us. Sirius XM Channel 158, wherever you're watching or listening from, we appreciate it. Good reminder, this show, every show on the network, always available in podcast form, whether you're looking specifically at their shows or for the VSiN Best Bets feed, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you check it out. We're keeping tabs on this Sweden-Latvia game, as well as the Olympic hockey rolls on the men's side. Sweden currently up 3-1 right now. Sweden only 19 shots on goal, but three of them in the back of the net here. Jacob Markstrom let one in on the other side, just 14 shots on net for Latvia, where we currently sit. Sweden laying 2.5 on the puck line coming into this thing. So currently covering. We'll see if they can hang on the third period.
Yes, we will be watching. It's a little bit of a game and still plenty of time. So nothing determined yet, even though there is an expectation of how this will play out.
Yes, long game, absolutely. The game
and
total.
Hockey is stupid.
As your favorite saying, the game total in this one, by the way, 5.5. It was heavily juiced toward the over, so we'll see if we can get some more scoring here moving forward. Still to come this hour here on Follow the Money as well. We got a couple great guests. We're going to get into a little more MLB. We did our St. Louis Cardinals preview earlier, but more big picture stuff leading into the MLB season with Chris Jimenez in just a little bit, former MLB catcher, doing great work over there at MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM as well. We'll also have Adam Kimmelman break down some more of the Olympic hockey, his thoughts on the quarterfinals, as we are just one game away from having that officially be set. The winner of this game will go on to face Team USA. Could Team USA potentially be at risk with Sweden starting to play a little bit better here? Get into that and some of the awards, other things, look ahead to the NHL season. That said, we're going to start in the National Football League, JVT, because this is a big day in terms of the NFL calendar. And throughout the course of the offseason, every step of the way, there are going to be some of these marquee dates that are important for us. Today, the franchise tag window officially open through 4 p.m. Eastern on March 3rd. So teams can apply the franchise tag or the transition tag to a player, one player per team. Who are some of the names that you're keeping tabs on this week and beyond?
At franchise tag, I mean, specifically, like we hit on it really quickly yesterday, but the Colts are actually a pretty interesting group. I mean, what do you do in terms of deciding what to do with Daniel Jones versus Alec Pierce in the franchise tag? I would say that it's Alec Pierce who deserves a franchise tag a little bit more. I don't think you want to be stuck with, you know, $40 million to a dude on a one-year deal coming off of an Achilles injury. So I would expect the Colts franchise tag Pierce and then decide what to do from there. I mean, clearly their move today, it ties into the franchise tag, it looks like Anthony Richardson, it's not a move, I should say, but it looks like Anthony Richardson's going to request a trade, and the report was from Stephen Holder that they're focusing on building around Daniel Jones. I don't think that means franchise tag for him. I think that means work out a deal and then move on from there. So I would expect the Colts are franchise tagging Alec Pierce.
Okay, and I think that's fair. I guess the only follow-up I would have to that on the Daniel Jones element is, couldn't you do the franchise tag as a placeholder to then do the deal moving forward? With Alec Pierce, he is somebody I would imagine you just don't want to let walk. He's got to be one of the more coveted free agents in this cycle because of what he can do in the downfield pass game.
Right. So don't you want to make sure that you can keep him?
I would think so. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, if you can't work something out with Daniel Jones, do you get put in a bind?
Can't you?
I don't know. This is, you would tell me, because this is the organization you're most close with.
I would expect that you can probably get something done with Daniel Jones. I mean, given the situation, he doesn't have a ton of chips to gamble with at this point right now. You did pretty well. I think there seems to be some sort of connection there, too. So I would think you can get it done. And of the two, I mean, you and I have discussed this a little bit. I think, well, I'll ask you this. Of the two you'd rather play chicken with, who would you rather do it with?
Fair. Yeah,
I would be
okay letting the injured Daniel Jones walk before I would let Alec Pierce
Correct.
Go. The price tag for a wide receiver this year for that franchise tag, a little over $28 million is that number. To go back to what you mentioned about Anthony Richardson, though, and the quote was that it's starting to seem, quote, inevitable that Anthony Richardson will request a trade from Indy this offseason. How disappointing is that for you from a fan standpoint, given everything, where he was drafted, the expectations of development, and none of that having come to fruition?
I mean, I think it's disappointing in the fact that, you know, you spent a fourth overall pick. By the way, the guy that used that fourth overall pick still has a job. And you got really nothing out of it for the most part. And you gave up so quickly. That's the weird part. I mean, again, the messaging around it was, hey, man, we know. this is going to be a project. We're going to develop it. We're going to do everything right. And then the second adversity reared its head, which you knew was coming, you're like, we can't do this. This is crazy. I'm out of here. And so I just don't understand. Sweden, by the way, with a goal, I believe. So we're up 4-1 right now with 14 minutes left to go. We're in the third, correct? Yeah, third period. That to me is the disappointing part. And let's tack on what's going on with Daniel Jones, because I've said this a couple of times. Folks, the wheels were coming off for Daniel Jones. And I think this is the worrisome part about deciding to go down this path. If you go from week 6 and onward, when Jones really started to kind of take a turn with some of his play, he played 8 games. He had a PFF passing grade of 59.9, which was behind, actually, Riley Leonard in his 5 starts. 13 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. A turnover worthy play rate of 4.6%, which is very, very high. Averaged just 7.7 yards per attempt. I think that we saw signs that Daniel Jones, they had gotten off to a great start, but there were clearly signs that either the league was catching up with what they were doing or that Daniel Jones' play was somewhat heading south. And so then you do this, decide we're going to, or again, they haven't decided Anthony Richardson's going to ask for a trade, but every decision, every action has been that they're going to move on from Anthony Richardson, right? So you're going to re-sign Daniel Jones coming off of a major injury after a season in which he was clearly declining over the course of his final 8 games. And this is what you're doing here? I don't know, man. I don't really love it. Don't love it.
What do you think that you get in return for Anthony Richardson, who hasn't done anything, has been injury prone, only has,
relax.
But also, like, he only played 17 games, and I think that's how many, is that not the same number of college games he played? Like, it was a very low number
somewhere
of collegiate
there.
Games. Yeah. So, yes, the injury history, but the wear and tear very little considering. So do you think someone takes a chance on what is like a massive arm and a great physical tool set, moldable clay, so to speak? And if so, what do you get in return for him?
I'm trying to see. And the only what I'm looking right now. So there's 49ers. I'll invoke Trey Lance, right? 49ers traded Trey Lance to the Cowboys back in 2023 for a 4th round pick, something like that.
Okay.
5th round pick. I mean, do you get a team to just kind of buy in on the upside, the potential of what he could potentially what
so
he
that's
could
the
be?
Thing.
He's still pretty young,
you're
too.
You're also still not bringing him in to be the guy, right? So then isn't that just him behind the scenes, seeing what you can get out of him and still not developing as a starter, if that's the case?
Well, I think you're trading for him with the thought of letting, again, he's only 23, so like you let him sit for a couple of years, maybe see if he can learn, get into one of these quarterback developmental spots like a Minnesota maybe or something like that. I mean, Minnesota did with Daniel Jones, right? They brought him in. He was their 3rd quarterback, emergency guy, whatever. Everybody credits Kevin O'Connell for Daniel Jones' turnaround, even though, you know, he wasn't really there for that long. But maybe Minnesota's a spot where you can just, hey, here's a short flyer. Let's just get him on the roster and see maybe if we can do something with him.
Okay.
Your team maybe?
I would prefer
third
not.
String. What do you mean? He's not going to play. It's just going to be a third string. Like, let's just see what we got here.
I just don't need the energy. I don't like the idea of like all the attention around backup quarterbacks. We just don't need it.
I mean, I don't know. There's attention. He's just
yes,
he's
huh? Because of the way
disappear.
People talk about Brock Purdy all the time. There's always something. There's always people in the background, and I don't like it.
So, what do you think?
I don't know. That's why I asked you. I'm genuinely curious to see what plays out with him. He hasn't been. I personally think that Indianapolis set him back that much further by not giving an opportunity to him to see what he is after investing as much as they did in him.
Yeah.
And that's an organizational and a franchise failure in my mind. So we'll see if Daniel Jones is the answer. I don't think he is.
The Rams, what about that?
That could be fun. Because Matthew Stafford, you know, is like on the retirement track.
Right, so there's no
so
noise.
Not,
it doesn't matter. Get him in the building for a year. You know, you've got to find backup as well already. So
great offensive mind to learn from.
Correct.
I like a lot of those things.
And,
that
just,
could work.
And just see what you can do for him. I mean, the other problem with a trade for, I mean, it's actually a problem. Actually, no, you're fine there because you wouldn't probably take in his fifth year option because he's still on that rookie deal. But still, it is, you know, a decent penny to pay for a guy who's going to be a third string quarterback potentially on your roster, which you don't know is going to be the case. So we'll see if that's it. The club option, of course, coming up for 2027, that's 23.5. That obviously, wherever he goes, will not be enacted.
Some other big names in position potentially to get tagged. George Pickens kind of leads the list at the wide receiver position for Dallas right now. Kyle Pitts at tight end, another one with Atlanta where you imagine you want to make him a priority, but I feel like franchise.
Come on.
This was much better. Like
it
you
was,
could
I mean,
tell.
Yeah.
He finally it was starting to happen. We got a little bit closer to the ceiling.
Yeah.
You did not have believed
it. I just think it's funny. I mean, like, we've talked about this for Kyle Pitts for a very long time. It actually, we talked about them yesterday. It reminds me of my Angels and Joe Adell. Like, every year, it was like, man, he's going to get it. He's going to get it. And he finally did, as we hit yesterday. So, maybe. I mean, it's also the other part of it is, are there any other real are there any other real options for Atlanta to, like, realistically franchise tag? It makes a little bit more sense that you would go out there. Kyle Pitts' position tag is value is $16 million. It's kind of a lot. But to give Pitts some credit, Stefanski's offense is one in which tight ends can thrive. And so maybe there's something there where Stefanski sees something. We want to use him. We're going to use him differently. We're finally going to unlock him. I mean, look what Fannin did at the end of the year last year for Cleveland. And maybe you're going to get something here with him. And thus, that would be the case.
Breece Hall could be in that position with New York. I would say more than likely. Kenneth Walker was another name that was popping up. But we already got the report that John Schneider for Seattle, who doesn't really franchise people to begin with. He's only done it twice in his tenure. But that is not going to be the case with Kenneth Walker here. What is his free agent value to you?
I don't know. I mean, it sucks, but he's a running back. I know he won Super Bowl MVP, but you do wonder where he ultimately ends up. He's a very good running back, but at the end of the day, I don't know if there's going to be something for him that's going to be super lucrative as you look around.
Like, in Seattle, I still think he would be valuable considering Zach Charbonnet, is coming off of a significant injury.
Yep.
And you don't know what you're going to necessarily get back from him when he returns. But, like, I don't know.
I mean, he'd probably still re-sign with Seattle.
Well, that's kind of my thinking, is that you don't have to put down, what is it, $14 million?
Yep.
Off the top
is
for
Rico
Walker.
Is Rico Dowdle a free agent?
Ooh, I don't know that answer. I don't think so, though.
Okay.
I genuinely don't know the answer, though. Maybe. Let's look that up in the break. On that note, we got to come back next. Talking hockey again, 4-1, Sweden up on Latvia, 11 minutes to go.
Yeah.
We'll talk all things Olympics and beyond with Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Mika Zibanejad scored just shy of 6 minutes into the third period here as Sweden takes a 4-1 lead over Latvia. Sweden trying to cement their spot in the quarterfinals where they would play Team USA coming up as Olympic action rolls on. And boy, has this been fun seeing all the NHL players in action. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Excited to welcome in Adam Kimmelman on the Progressive Guest Line. NHL.com Deputy Managing Editor, also host of the NHL Draft Class podcast. But how much have you enjoyed all of the action out there so far in Milan?
Well, it's been great. You know, it's so long since we've had this level of hockey and in this sort of environment. And you can tell just how intense and how high-paced the games are. Like, this is, like, guys get up. This is Stanley Cup playoff level hockey intensity in a much more concentrated fashion, just because, you know, the games come up so quick and, you know, it's just been, it's been good. It's been fun. It's been competitive, probably even more competitive than we realized, because, you know, France pushed and they stayed in a couple of games. Italy pushed and they stayed in a couple of games. You know, Slovakia upset Finland on the first day, and none of us were expecting that. You know, Denmark has put on a pretty representative showing of itself. You know, yeah, it's been fun. And the powers that we expected to be the powers are the teams that are, you know, sort of taking to the forefront, U.S. and Canada especially.
So we've talked a lot, Adam, about this Canadian team specifically in goal. What have you made of this rotation that the Canadians have thrown out there? And specifically, Jordan Binnington, we've talked about a lot. In his play in the NHL versus what you've seen here, is this sustainable?
I think if you go back a year ago to Four Nations, you saw what Jordan Binnington's able to do when he has, you know, all-star level players around him. You know, you don't have to make every save, but you have to make every important save. And he's shown that he's able to do that, you know, he was at his best when he had really, really good players in front of him. Look, that St. Louis team is struggling. They're near the bottom in the standings. They're having issues, you know, and he probably is part of those issues with his play. But I think you take good players and you put them in good situations surrounded by top level players, and they're able to maximize their talents and their gifts. And I think that's what Jordan Binnington's able to do. You saw it a year ago at Four Nations, and I think you're seeing it now. I would be, you know, barring injury, I don't envision, you know, Jordan Binnington losing any playing time at this point. You know, we heard it after John Cooper said it after game one of the Olympics. Like, I made my mind up on who was going to be my starter a year ago. So there was no question in his mind. Maybe others had questions, but he knows what his players are capable of. And he knows what Jordan Binnington is capable of doing because he's shown it in international hockey.
Yeah, that was a good line. Oh, when did you decide it was going to be Binnington? Just, you know, 365 days ago. That said, with that being the one question mark that there was around this Canadian team and them holding up in net the way that they have, is there a team that you think could upend Canada, or is the gold medal theirs to take?
I think it's so close. Obviously, you know, like, you look at the U.S., obviously, I think, you know, Czechia is not going to be a walkover for them. You know, I'm not sure who they're going to go with in goal on the back-to-back, whether it's going to be Lukas Dostal or Dan Vladar. But I think absolutely Czechia is capable of upsetting them. Certainly the U.S. is. Sweden, you know, I have to, for all transparency's sake, Sweden was my gold medal winner favorite when we did our predictions on NHL.com. So I certainly think they're capable of beating Canada. I don't know if there's a team among the eight left that you can look at and say, well, nobody's beating these guys. I mean, look, it happens. You know, it's a one-game elimination tournament at this point, and, you know, all you need is one bad period, and it can send you home. So I think they would have to be the favorites, Canada, but by no means would I say they are an overwhelming favorite.
I don't think you were alone in thinking that Sweden would be a team that could medal, if not contend, moving forward in this thing. Yet they had such a slow start. It seems like the last two games they've kicked it into gear a little bit. That final game of group play against Slovakia, now what we're seeing here against Latvia. Their coach has been very criticized for how he's managed the lineup, doesn't want to play some of his best players at times for whatever reason. They, if they end up winning this game as we expect them to, with 6 minutes to go here up 4-1, have USA in their next game, how closely contested do you think that could be? Should the Americans be on upset watch there?
Oh, absolutely. I think with the Americans, you still wonder, you know, against the top level teams, do they have enough scoring? You know, you look at the players who aren't there, you know, Jason Robertson, Cole Caulfield especially, and, you know, you wonder where would they be if they had those guys. Obviously, they're the number two seed overall going into the quarterfinals, so obviously they're doing something right. But, you know, would they be even in a more secure position if they had those guys? So, you know, I think for sure with Sweden's quality and goal, whether they go with Markstrom or Wallstad or Gustafsson, no matter who they use, you know, it's going to be tough sledding for them to create the amount of offense. So for sure, I think it's you know, assuming it's going to be U.S. Sweden, as Sweden scores again here, I'm watching the game myself. Like, it's going to be tough sledding for the U.S. It's going to be a close game. It might be, you know, there's a chance it could be the best game of the quarterfinal round. I think the teams are very evenly matched.
As you look at the bottom half of that bracket, we saw Germany beat up on France. They'll take on Slovakia. How do those two teams match up in your mind?
Well, I think Slovakia certainly opened eyes day one of the tournament with what they were able to do against Finland. I think, you know, they're a team that certainly showed they could score, certainly showed they're not going to back down from any of the quote-unquote power four teams that are in the tournament. So, yeah, I think it's going to be – I don't – you know, I'm not so sure Germany has another one in them after winning today, you know. They'll need Philipp Grubauer to have another, you know, top-level effort similar to what he did today. I don't know on short rest if he's capable of coming back and doing that at that level. I mean, obviously, Leon Draisaitl's Leon Draisaitl, and I think he had, what, a goal and two assists today. So that's sort of what he's capable of in a big spot. So it'll be an interesting game. I would probably lean towards Slovakia, you know, winning. But again, nothing would surprise me as far as another potential upset coming.
Yeah, even the odds indicate that should be a closely contested one. Germany slightly favored, minus 118. But if you do like Slovakia, just minus 102 on that money line. Switzerland beats Italy today, 3-0. Probably should have been more the way they were driving pucks on net, but couldn't get there. They're a plus 180 underdog to Finland. Any early thoughts on that game, too?
Well, it's going to be interesting. You know, the Swiss, back-to-back years in the World Championship, they've been to the gold medal game. So I don't think anyone should be surprised that they're, you know, going to go into the quarterfinals, and it's not going to be a walkover for Finland. I mean, UC Saros has played very well for them, you know, so far, outside of maybe one little bump in the road early in the tournament. He's been really, really good for them. But this Swiss team, they are not going to be back. They're not going to give up. They're not going to be back down. They're not going to be intimidated by anybody, again, because they know what they're capable of doing, and they know how they're capable of playing against some of hockey's powers. So, you know, if I'm looking at this and there's one quote-unquote upset, I would, you know, really look towards closest. I think Switzerland can beat Finland. I don't know if they will, but again, nothing would surprise me. These teams are so evenly matched. And, you know, the fact that Switzerland has done it on the international stage the last 2 years probably gives them more confidence than the external opinion would be.
Adam, you have a lot of work here covering the National Hockey League, and I'm curious your thoughts as a draft guy and some of the talent that we have seen here. Does the NHL know that Italy is sitting on a gold mine of goaltenders, both women and men's? I mean, these performances from these Italian goalkeepers have been incredible.
Well, I think Anaheim probably has a good feeling on what they have with Damian Clara. I can't speak, unfortunately, too much to the women's game. I haven't had a chance to watch too much of it, but you know, look, it speaks to the global growth of the game, both for the men and the women, that you can look at Italy, which is not a recognized powerhouse by any stretch on either side, men or women, and say, hey, this is where the future is. And it's great for the game, both, you know, both men and the women, that like it's like the U.S. women. It's great that they're going to play Canada in the gold medal game. But I think it would be better for the growth of the game if you had more teams involved. You saw more great talent coming out of Sweden and Finland and Italy and Switzerland and other places. That's the same on the men's side. Yes, Canada, U.S. men's final will be great in North America. It'll be great for the American audience. But man, like, let's get more people coming out of Sweden. You know, we're watching Latvia right now. Albert Smith's number three for Latvia, probably could be a top five pick in the 26th draft. Let's get more guys like that coming out of quote unquote non-traditional countries. And that's the whole point of having the NHL players in the Olympics. It's to take a kid who might not otherwise watch hockey, a kid in Italy, a kid in France, who might not otherwise be into hockey, but they know the Olympics, and they're like, oh my goodness, this is something I want to do. And you never know where the next Austin Matthews, the next Connor McDavid, the next Sidney Crosby is going to come from.
Adam, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Enjoy the end of the game.
Thank you. Anytime.
Adam Kimmelman. Speaking of young players as well, Macklin Celebrini is no longer coming up. He has arrived and has been fantastic to this point. Just 19 years old. He's on the ice stick tap and he wants the puck from Connor McDavid. It is an awesome thing. We got to step aside. More hockey a little bit later. Shifting gears to a little Major League Baseball with Chris Jimenez next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
If you laid the alts with Sweden in Olympic men's hockey today, you are 15 seconds away, rather, from cash-in. Sweden extending their lead with a William Nylander goal a couple minutes ago to 5-1, and it looks like that is where we are going to close final. So good on you. That means the Swedish men will now face Team USA in the quarterfinals coming up. As those odds populate, we will hit you with it in a moment. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here on Follow the Money. That said, let's get into a little bit of baseball, because that actually has been the biggest news breaker of the day that we had coming in. Excited to have Chris Jimenez join us here on the Progressive Guest Line, former MLB catcher, doing great work over there at MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM Channel 89. And when we walked in initially this morning, Chris, I thought that everything that happened with executive director of the MLBPA, Tony Clark, stepping down had to do with the misappropriation of funds that they've been investigated for, all of this. And then we get the Jeff Passan bomb that it's actually he relieved himself due to inappropriate relationship with his sister-in-law who was hired by the union. So what's the group chat been like in your circles today?
Holy cow. If I could say this on live radio, it would probably make everybody laugh. But it's been quite interesting, to say the least. There's been a lot of sister-in-law comparisons. And is it, you know, right or wrong? Obviously, it's wrong. But like talking about if it's okay if it's your brother or your wife, like, it's incredible to think.
Wife, sister, or brother's wife.
Kinda go, there you go. That's what I meant to say. I was trying to find the best way to say that without getting kicked off the show. Right off the bat. But yeah, it's been quite interesting, to say the least. I don't think any of us anticipated this last night, with the first meeting being scheduled today for the Cleveland Guardians kind of getting X-made last night. So I think that kind of tipped some people off to, hey, something may be going on. But like Sorry said, we all thought it was due to, you know, the potential investigation that's going down right now with Tony Clark. And this flat out, this sucks. You know, anytime there's some public negative publicity, in regards to anything that has to do with either Major League Baseball, the owners, or of course the players union, it's a bad look, right? It's a terrible look. And I think, you know, some people may think of this as a sign of weakness through the union, but I kind of look at it the other way. I think this may be something that potentially galvanizes the group of guys going into, you know, what is a looming December 1st deadline. Now there's a lot that's going to happen between now and then, but yeah, it's it was definitely a shocker to wake up to that and then find out the bombshell about a sister-in-law being involved. And we're like, wait a minute here. This is way deeper than we thought it was.
Chris, do you think this increases or decreases the chance of the shutout that seems to be on the horizon here? How does this affect negotiations for Major League Baseball and the Players Association?
Honestly, I really don't think it'll have much effect on negotiations at all, to be completely honest. They have specific lead negotiators. Tony is not necessarily involved in that. So, I mean, he is, but not at the table, literally leading those meetings. You know, he's in attendance and whatnot, to my knowledge. But yeah, I don't think it really affects much. It definitely looks bad, right, from the side of the owners, understanding, trying to find anything they can to kind of divide the players union and stick a wedge in there as much as they can. But I really don't think it will have much effect, truthfully, on the bargaining side of things. It actually may make things a little easier at this point.
All right, let's talk a little Major League Baseball here. Christian Mendez with us, overlooking the season. Let's take a look at the Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll start at the top and then look everywhere else here at this point with LA. So let's just talk about it. How inevitable are the Los Angeles Dodgers with the way this roster is constructed?
They're very inevitable. And, you know, the amazing thing is, yes, they have some of the most premium talent that Major League Baseball has to offer, but they also have some of the best and most depth any roster has in Major League Baseball. They've done a fantastic job, not only this year, of really addressing the two needs they had, which was a legitimate defensive right fielder and a closer. I mean, they went out and got the best in both worlds on that regard. So that's the easy part of things, is you go attack that top part, but now it's filling in the gaps and those cracks. And this is where Andrew Friedman and Brandon Gomes are probably the best in the business. And it certainly helps to have, you know, LA in your back, you know, basically on top of your hat saying, listen, we're back-to-back defending world champions. If you want to come here and be a part of this, we would love to have you come in. We see a role for you. They just do a great job of pitching to a lot of players that you're going to probably start the year in AAA, but at some point, inevitably, somebody's going to get hurt. We will need you, and you will be a part of this thing. And I think that's a really big draw for guys, especially nowadays.
So there's a lot of teams that I think a lot of folks would point to potentially upend the Los Angeles Dodgers. The one team that, from a betting perspective, I don't understand why they're not getting more respect. Are the Detroit Tigers not the best team in the American League when all is said and done?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's an interesting question, because I think you could make an argument that they have the best pitching staff in the American League, 1 through 13. That includes the 5 or 6 starters and, you know, 7 or 8 guys in the bullpen. But I think we're – the market is right now is everybody's severely concerned about the offense. And I think there's a right to feel that way. You know, for the first 2 months of the season, this offense was going off like gangbusters. I think everybody kind of knew that at some point they would come back to the median. I don't think anybody really anticipated them dropping as low as they did or having the stretch that they had offensively. It just, it at some point, you know, the averages are going to play out, and you would think that they would find a way to come back to at least somewhat close to what they were doing the first 2 months of the year. So I understand it from that aspect. They didn't really add much offensively this year. They are going to be relying on a lot of the same cast, but they do have some players there that I absolutely love personally. I think Dylan Dingler might be the best overall catcher in baseball, not named Cal Raleigh right now. And I also like Riley Green a lot too. Now he had a pretty rough second half last year, and he's going to have to find a way to kind of navigate that full season of putting up those types of numbers. But to hit 34 homers and still find a way, you know, to have a bad 2 months is a pretty impressive year all the way around. They're just going to really be looking to some of these younger players to kind of take that next step. And that's kind of a tough place to be. My Cleveland Guardians are in the same boat right now, and I've seen it for the last 2 years, and it doesn't necessarily play out that way all the time.
The Tigers 11-1 in the American League. Your Guardians, by the way, 20-1 in that market. The Tigers, yeah, in terms of the World Series, 25-1. And just to show the disparity, the Dodgers is the short shot plus 230. The next closest team is the Yankees at 10-1 after that. So, like, they are definitely looking in a class in their own from an odds perspective. Take me through your Guardians, though. Like, what are the expectations in 2026?
Yeah, I mean, internally, the expectations are to take that next step. And I do know this. I could make the argument Detroit has the best pitching staff in the American League, but the Guardians are right up there and should be right up there with them. We know how good their bullpen's been the last couple of years. There's a few guys in this rotation that are looking to take the next step. The problem with that is this pitching staff in general has been relied upon very heavily the last 2 years in particular to make the runs that they've made. And I'm worried about, you know, that kind of coming back to bite some of these young men in the rear end here with the injury bug. And obviously, I don't want to put any of that bad juju on my team or anything like that. But I think it's a fair thing to see, you know, potentially play out because of how much these guys have been utilized. And again, we're in the same boat from an offensive standpoint. We need to rely heavily on young players. And listen, I'm not saying that that's a good or a bad thing. I actually think there's a lot of positives that can be taken out of this. There's some real opportunity for some of these young kids to come up and really make a name for themselves. They have to take that and grasp it and go play with it. But the problem is, you know, there's a lot of unproven talent there, and they are very left-handed, and that is going to be an issue. And they have had some issues in the past with trying to convince free agents to come out. Obviously, they can't play at the top of the market from a monetary perspective, but they have been able in the past to at least offer playing time, and that's not something I think they've been willing to do. Is they need to see what they have in these young kids, and that way they can make decisions going forward.
Chris, last 90 seconds, who is the biggest roadblock for Los Angeles in the National League?
In the National League, that's a great question. I'm going to say the Phillies. I still like the Phillies a lot. I know they're getting older. A lot of that depends on Zach Wheeler's health for sure, but I still like their pitching staff. Bringing Schwarber back, I think, was something they had to do. Getting rid of Castellanos, I think, again, was something they had to do. But I think the Phillies are going to be pretty tough to deal with this year in some capacity.
Chris, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure you're just going to get more and more texts about everything with the MLBPA today. It's going to be a long day. Thank you for this.
I'm really looking forward to those texts, too. See how many times I can laugh.
I'm sure his show will be very busy coming up as well. If you haven't checked it out yet, make sure you check out Loud Outs, MLB Network Radio, SiriusXM, Channel 89. Doing a great job over there. Really appreciate the time and insight, especially from someone who played the game at the highest level for as long as he did. Philly 7-1 on the odds board for the National League. Dodgers plus 130. That's 7-1 price, pretty on par with what we're seeing from the Mets and Braves as well.
Yeah, I think everything we've covered with him, one of the things that really does stick out is, as you can tell with my leading question, I really like this Tigers team, man. The pitching staff's great. I understand all of the concerns about the offense, but they are very, very good. And Chris is very good, too, despite the fact that he went to up north.
That place.
Yeah.
That we don't talk about.
He's not one of the uncultured hicks that I talk about all the time that went to that school.
Also, as we talk about Major League Baseball season coming up, good to note, our MLB betting guide here on VSiN officially out as of today. If you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you've already got it right there, able to download whenever you need to. You can also get it a la carte, $19.99, VSiN.com/guide. full breakdowns from both our own Adam Burke and Jensen Lewis. Every single team, you get an analytical perspective. You get the player perspective. Doesn't get any better than that. We got to step aside. When we come back, our VSiN NBA betting expert, senior analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel, going to break down the association with us. Look ahead to the second half.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Starting by Tony, Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Mitch and Pauly as we welcome you back to this Tuesday edition of Follow the Money live on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We'll save most of our hockey talk for in about 15 minutes. We kick off the third hour of the program as the men's quarterfinals are now officially set, but did at least real quickly want to get out these prices for those of you who like to jump on numbers as soon as you can with that final result.
Lickety split.
Sweden-Latvia final 5-1 against Team USA. The Americans open a minus 220 money line favorite, laying 1.5 on the puck line, plus 120 if you want to lay the puck and a half with Team USA. Sweden, plus 160 on the money line. It's minus 160 to take that goal and a half. And the total for the game, 6.5, early juice on the under at minus 120. So we will revisit that again in about 15 minutes. We're actually going to go to your baby, your pride and joy, National Basketball Association, here to kick us off as the All-Star break is in the rear view. Is in the rear view. But the break goes on for another couple of days here, which for those people that have been all in and fully immersed on football for so long, if they're still trying to shift into other sports, where should they be looking big picture? How should they be diving in and attacking this free time before games get going again on Thursday?
I mean, I think you want to familiarize yourself with the rosters, obviously, know who's playing where. Breaking news, James Harden is on the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know if anybody knew that. I think for the most part, a lot of people that are listening to us have some sense or watching of what's been going on in the NBA and going from there. Look, this is the time of year where it gets serious, obviously. You have the home stretch heading into the postseason. Don't look now, but the postseason starts in less than 2 months. That is going to go by quickly. I know we're getting ready for college basketball, but I would spend my time, obviously, handicapping things, but going back and kind of getting a sense of, all right, how did these matchups play out when they played each other? What do some of these projected playoff rounds look like? Because you don't get a ton of time to get ready for the postseason, and styles make fights in the NBA postseason. Matchups matter. Game-to-game scheme matters. You know, you can talk about all the numbers you want and whatnot, Stormy, but when you've got a weak link and I can attack you, or if you've got a bunch of dudes who can't shoot above the break threes and we're going to leave them alone, do all these sorts of – those are the things that are really going to make these series. So just familiarize yourself with the way that these teams play and get ready for what's going to be a postseason. From a betting standpoint, I will stick to my guns here. I was on with Joe Serralo the other night. I think it was Sunday night. And I was on with our buddy Dave Ross earlier today as well with Mark Belousis, and I reiterate the same things to me. In the Eastern Conference, I think the Cavaliers did a great job. I think they're worth looking at again at that 10-1 range to win the division, potentially steal it from Detroit. Also, the best team in the Eastern Conference, I'd agree with the market. And in the West, when they're healthy, I still think that Denver is going to be the team that comes out eventually after a pretty gritty run through what looks like a very, very good Western Conference. So those are my two teams. And if you ask me right now, given what we have seen and the data points collected, I'll go with a Denver-Cleveland NBA Finals. Oh.
So all of a sudden, you're more on board with Cleveland actually performing in the playoffs as
well. No, I mean, like I've said, I have under...
Because I know you like them. I know you like what they put together. But you have brought up multiple times, and I can't fault you for
right,
this.
And that's
the
it.
James Harden of it all and his lack of being able to perform when it matters.
My whole thing with Cleveland has always been the same thing. I understand any trepidation about it. But if you just look at the archetype of the way this team is built, I think they're the best team in the Eastern Conference here. So, you see the odds here, too, by the way, and what the betting is looking like over at BetMGM. And
so
not
this,
a surprise.
This I wanted to bring up with you because specifically you mentioned the Nuggets. The favorite is the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're a short shot by a mile at plus 130. They are the highest handle percentage, so the most money has come in on them, at least at BetMGM. But the most tickets that have been bet on who's going to win it all is the aforementioned Nuggets. And you've been kind of on this for a long time, like believing that this could be the year for them to get back.
They're my guys, man. I mean, they're very, very good when they're fully constructed. Just go back. You want to talk about how good their depth is? Look at the 16 games without Nikola Jokic. They were 10-6 without him. They were very, very good without Jokic on the floor And I think that that's just going to win. Again, the caveat being they're healthy. Aaron Gordon's still sidelined. Peyton Watson's hurt, all of those sort of things. But when they're together and fully constructed, they're a team that works really, really well together.
You also saw on that graphic, and shout out John Ewing of BetMGM for the data that he posts regularly, the biggest liability for the book being the San Antonio Spurs. Yeah. They're currently seventh on the board at 16-1 right now to win this year's NBA Finals. Where do they stand in your eyes?
I mean, I think they're pretty solidly the third best team. I mean, I think there's 1 and 2. And then, but like, I know, Justin, when we come back, when we get back to our normal program and we come back, we can unveil our S tiers for the NBA. We can start doing those. If you look at the tiers and where they rank, it would very clearly for me be the Oklahoma City and Denver in the Western Conference together, and then below them would be the San Antonio Spurs. Generally, the non-data handicap here is that in the NBA, you kind of need that team to – teams have a gradual progression. They get to the postseason for the first time and they fail. They make a progressively longer run and then they fail. I mean, Oklahoma City has actually been part of that. We've seen them do it. So, you know, you look back, Dallas had a couple of runs and then ultimately got to the NBA Finals. They lost in the finals, but at least they did that when Luka Doncic was there, obviously. Look at the Boston Celtics, how many times they failed in the Eastern Conference Finals before it happens. We can go down the list of teams that have had really good teams and had really good construction, but took the gradual path there. The Spurs are still a really young team in a lot of key positions, and I think that'll ultimately hold them back as well.
One last thing on this before we move on. For the Eastern Conference, your Cavaliers, 3-1 at the top, but I mean, there are a lot of teams that are in that range right now. The Knicks plus 330, the Pistons plus 350, the Celtics at plus 380, who have done such an excellent job without Jason Tatum, and now all the talk about could he actually be available and get back here.
Oh, it's not could. He's coming back, so, it sounds like, yeah.
So, with that in mind, like, who is the Cavs' biggest competition in the conference?
I mean, I don't want to quit on Detroit. I think Detroit's very, very good. They're a very good defensive team. They've played extremely well at home, one of the best defensive efficiencies for home teams so far this NBA postseason. They've got a lead guy in Cade Cunningham. I think my big problem with Detroit is when you get to these playoff series, who is the secondary creator that's going to help you on offense? And I don't think they have that next to Cade Cunningham. Again, we'll invoke some of these teams of the past, but you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you have a secondary creator that can get it done for your guy. Let's go back to the Mavericks who made that run. Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, Oklahoma City, Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You have to have, I think, another option that offensively can create looks for himself and for others. And I just don't know if at a very high level Detroit has that right now, but they're so good defensively. They're very good up front. And obviously, Cade might be the best player on any floor that he steps on, and that's going to go a very long way.
And even better when you elevate your game in the fourth quarter the way
Correct.
That he
yes.
has on numerous occasions.
In the running for clutch player of the year.
Pistons plus 350 for the Eastern Conference again, 15-1 to win it all. Now, we've talked a lot, especially recently, given the Utah Jazz and everything that has happened there and them sitting their players late mm-hmm. in games. They are one of a couple teams that have faced fines from Adam Silver and the NBA for quote-unquote tanking. And Ben Golliver, formerly of the Washington Post on the Greatest of All Talk NBA pod, suggested that perhaps gambling companies have played a role in Adam Silver punishing teams for tanking. Take a listen.
And now you have guys who are sitting down in the middle of games that are potentially winnable. They're not playing in the fourth quarter because, you know, teams are potentially playing for draft positioning. I think one real key aspect to this with Utah, if you're not playing guys in the fourth quarter, how many bets is that impacting, right? We know how much the NBA has gotten in bed with gambling. You know, over-unders are at stake. You know, player props are at stake. If coaches are just willy-nilly not playing guys the entire game and they're not letting people know in advance that they plan to do that, you're going to have a lot of angry gamblers and a lot of angry gambling companies as well. So I think that was one aspect to why he really had to lay the smackdown, so to speak, at All-Star Weekend.
So I do want to point out, and I know you see you have the hand on the face. This has been all over social media, though, and you texted it, I think, well, that people have taken this as a report.
Don't read what I wrote.
What?
Don't read verbatim what I wrote to you.
Okay. Well, no. However,
you're going to Ron Burgundy it.
No. But I mean, I would like your two cents on this because it is funny how this is kind of like caught on in the social media world as a report, as if this is fully true when it's just speculation.
You've got me up against it here a little bit, but I'll say this, and you hit it on the head at the end there. I don't want to make the mistake of believing that what is on social media and what is on X is actually representative of the thinking of the masses, because Twitter is not a real space. Okay. Having said that, this is getting passed around as a report. And in fact, the one that's catching on is angry gambling companies reportedly played a part in Adam Silver punishing teams for tanking. Ben Golliver in that clip, and this is not anger at Ben Golliver, he is absolutely speculating on whether or not that played a role for Adam Silver. That is not a report in any way, shape, or form. And that is not why Adam Silver is doing what he is doing and coming down on these tanking teams and trying to at least come down on them. We have to be smarter as a society. We cannot be this stupid. When you hear that clip and run with it like it's a report and that Adam Silver is being controlled by some of these gambling companies, yeah, you're going to get some bettors who are angry about these sort of things. And I would speculate myself that is it the worst thing in the world if these bettors are losing out on these overs that they're constantly betting? Why would the sportsbooks want that to end? They're only betting a vast majority of these bettors over. I'll continue, but I just it was very stupid that this was being received as some sort of report as opposed to speculation, which is what it was from Golliver.
Well, something that you don't have to speculate anymore is paying full price for gas, because with the Upside app, you can actually get cash back. It's quick, it's easy, it adds up. Drivers getting $200 to $300 a year just by buying the gas they already needed. Promo code NETWORK. When you download the Upside app, you'll get 25 cents back per gallon on your first tank. You can also cash out anytime to your bank account or e-gift cards. Again, use the code NETWORK when you download the free Upside app. Offers vary by user and location. Upside.com for details.